The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh.
You're in the madhouse now.
The following episode may contain explicit language. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to the Atlanta Podcast. I am your host, Matt B. Davis. It is Christmas. It's Christmas Day. It's 5 o'clock in the p.m. I'm committed to getting these to you every Wednesday morning, which means recording on Christmas. No, don't cry for me, Argentina. It's really okay. I saw a movie with my family today. It is our Christmas tradition. For those that don't know, for thousands of years, Jews would go to the movies on Christmas and then get Chinese food, and we have completed one half of that project. We went and saw Wreck-It Ralph Breaks the Internet. We were all there. I think this is a first. I usually bring either two of the kids or just the kids, and this was the first time we all packed in and made it. And there was a lot of fighting before and after, but we appeared to survive the movie with limited craziness. Many of you gave feedback on the Stacey Dafis episode. Thank you so much for that. We will be bringing you more. We want to think about how we want to do it. We think we want to do maybe a Q&A style to give it some sort of basic platform. So we reached out for some questions a little while ago. We are going to do that again. If you'd like to go ahead and send me those questions, we can bank them. MattBDavis@iCloud.com. Stacy is StacyKDavis@iCloud.com. You can also reach me on social media. But we got a lot of good positive feedback on that one. And so thank you guys for listening and for telling your friends if you did. And please continue to do that. Tell your friends. Also, leave us a review on iTunes. We haven't gotten one since July. Would love it, love it, love it if you would press that purple podcast app or however you do it and leave a review. On today's program, Blaz Elias. Now, as you know, here in the Atlanta Podcast, we talk to folks in Atlanta or folks that are visiting Atlanta. Blaz Elias was once upon a time the drummer for a band called Slaughter. Those of you as old as me know Slaughter as one of those great hair metal bands of the 80s. And hey, guess what? When the 80s is over, you got to still make some music, right? And make some money. So I've stayed in touch with Blaz. I met him a few years ago through obstacle racing. I believe we touch on that. And I've stayed in touch with him over the years. He was in town for Trans-Siberian Orchestra, who he played with. Many of you listening may have gone to that show or one of the shows. Me and Clayton drove up to Duluth. Yeah, that's right. OTP, baby. Drove all the way up to Duluth on a rainy night a couple of weeks ago to interview Blaz. And this is from the tour bus, baby. We sat in the tour bus before the show. And it's a relatively short episode as these things go because, well, he didn't have a ton of time. And we just did a little catch-up before the performance, which we thoroughly enjoyed. So thank you, Blaz, for that. But you're going to learn a little bit about him and about how he signed up with these guys. And might bring you a little bit back to those heydays of the 80s. All right, here's Blaz and I a couple weeks ago on that bus. Away we go.
Yo, check.
So you don't have to tell you how to talk into a microphone because you're a pro.
Not really.
Somewhat. All right. So when you said when you first met these guys, so how does one get on a gig like this if they've been playing together for 100 years?
This girl who kind of does their cast, I guess they call her the casting person, but she's also the choreographer, contacted me through Facebook, which is, I was lucky because I have these Facebook pages that I don't check like ever, right? And so I hadn't checked this page, my messages, in probably a year. And I decided one day, I better check and just see. And usually there's so many messages, I don't even ever see them. I happened to check. And that day she had written me asking if I might be interested. And so I first thought it was a joke, just a fan, you know. But it turns out it was legit, you know. And so they asked me to send a video of me playing. So I sent a video. And I kind of, you know, I do this flashy, stick spinny thing when I play. It's like, you know, I'm a very visual, physical drummer, and they seem to like what I do, you know. And so I asked the girl, I said, do you want me to kind of tone my thing down? She's like, no, we love what you do, you know. And so they brought me out, and I played with them, and we got along real well. Like I said, we were same generation, and so it, you know, it just kind of worked out, you know. Like they considered some younger guys because I'm, you know, I was 50 at the time I auditioned, but you know, they saw that I was in, you know, decent shape for my age, it's a very, very physically demanding show.
And you said 2.5 hours and two shows a night sometimes?
Two shows a night, 3 days a week, and then two singles, so we're doing 8 shows a week. And there's lots of pyro dust, smoke, hot lights, fire like you wouldn't believe. I mean, it's really hot. And then I'm playing full out, like with my crazy physical thing I do.
You know? And then how long does it take you to learn the songbook, as it were?
This was, the music is pretty complex. It's because there's all the first half of the shows is a Christmas story,
right?
And so there's more, you know, traditional songs, but the second half it's a lot of classically based music, kind of fused with rock, heavy metal. And so the song structures aren't typical rock songs. So there's a lot of memorization, you know, which that's the most difficult part, you know. But I, you know, the playing, it's exactly what I like to do. It's my kind of music. And so I'm just having the best time out here, man.
So when you, because it's funny, you mentioned Kiss earlier, which is an institution. And I said, oh, who's on it? So with this band, like, is there like a, who, like, is there a Gene and Paul, like the guys that absolutely own it, or is it so many generations down it's like the Dread Pirate Roberts and nobody knows who the first guy
was? The history of the band is it started out of a band called Sabotage, which was a heavy metal band, and there was a producer named Paul O'Neill who was a very, you know, prolific, you know, talented producer, and he produced a bunch of other, you know, famous bands and albums that, you know, you probably have in your collection. And he had this idea for this song called Christmas Eve Sarajevo 1224, and it was about the war in Sarajevo, but it had Christmas and classical music kind of, and based, the story of the song was based on this prodigy violinist, you know, from Bosnia, who played in the middle of town as the war was going on and played Christmas and classical songs. So the music was kind of a mixture of heavy metal and classical and Christmas. So they made this song, and it was on their record, Sabotage, called Dead Winter Dead, and Christmas radio stations started playing it. So they're on tour in Europe, and their manager calls and tells them they have a number one song. And this is kind of an underground heavy metal band, so they were really, you know, surprised. And so what basically they did is they just rebranded it as Trans-Siberian Orchestra, because the radio stations, when they heard the name Sabotage, they were like, well, maybe we don't want to play this as Sabotage, you know. So they rebranded it. And Paul O'Neill was...
And what year is this, are we talking? Like, when did it start?
I want to say 1990, the mid-90s. I'm not sure.
Not that long ago, right?
No, yeah.
I mean, that's a while ago, I guess, but not yeah. The 70s.
Not the 70s, the mid-90s. But Paul O'Neill was the producer, and he wrote a lot of stuff with John Oliva, who was the singer for Sabotage, who's still involved. Paul died last year, unfortunately, right as I was joining the band. But John is still involved. He produces and kind of directs things. And then Al Petrelli, who's our musical director, has been in the band since the beginning and co-wrote a lot of the music. And then there's some other guys from the original Sabotage band. And so what happened is, why we have the East and West is because there's a limited window to get these shows in during the holidays, so they split the band in half. So you have about half that original band in the West and half in the East, and they hired new guys to kind of fill in. And so I just happened to be, they had another guy, who'd been playing for a while. He's an amazing drummer. When it was time for change, I played with some of the guys before in different bands. They kind of knew who I was, and it was a good fit.
Do you have like a big like Russian like draw?
You know, it's funny because some of the guys will say that when people come in and talk to them, they expect them to be, Russian, but they're not. And and I had the same thing because the violinist for our group, Asha, when I first met her, I thought she was going to be this really intense Russian woman because her presence is so intense on stage, but she's just the sweetest thing, and she's not Russian. But it's just the name. I'm not sure.
But the audience, though, I'm asking, like when they approach you, do you? I heard some coming up here.
Did you really?
Like,
no.
Some of the women I passed, I was like, oh, that's Russian.
No, in fact, I have never met any from Russia.
Really?
To be honest with you. No. But I think, maybe there's an expectation that, there'd be Russian people in the band, but there's not. It's guys from Jersey and Florida.
Where did you grow up again?
I'm Texas myself.
Right?
Yeah, and then I moved out to Las Vegas in the 90s. But we meet like after the show. Like, the first show, we don't have time to meet people afterwards. But after the second show, we'll do our regular meet and greet, and then we'll do a signing line. Anyone in the arena who wants to meet us, we'll sit there for hours and sign autographs and say hi. You don't have to buy anything. So we meet a lot of people, and it's funny because some of the people, that I meet now, I'm the new guy. I meet them as adults, and the rest of the guys know them from when they were kids because they've been coming for 20 years.
Right. But you got to have a few people that know you from Slaughter Days,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the audience crosses over, so I'll, there's definitely people that remember me from then and say, hey, I saw you here, 20 years ago, whatever. But we have a pretty eclectic mix in the audience. You'll see guys with, metal band concert shirts sitting next to, older couples wearing, Christmas sweaters and suits,
right?
And it's a very interesting mix, but everyone seems to love the show. They all get along. It's awesome.
Right. We were talking about running earlier, so it's pouring today. Did you hit the stairs today in the arena?
I didn't do today. I decided to take today off because yesterday we ran pretty hard.
What'd you do yesterday? What was the workout yesterday?
We ran along the river in Knoxville.
Right.
And then I just hit the gym in the morning,
The little hotel gyms?
Yeah. Yeah, and so the main reason I hit the gym, because I'll do like body weights. My main workouts, I do like I run and I stop like every half a mile and I'll do push-ups, burpees.
Dude,
I find
that's the OCR workout, bro.
To do pull-ups on, I pick up rocks and do squats and thrusts.
We got
to
get you back out there on the obstacle course.
I got to get back out there. But there's, here, I don't know where the places are to find the overhangs to do pull-ups. So I got to hit the gym to do mainly the pull-ups. Because that's the hardest thing, man, the upper body pulling, climbing, those kind of things. That's, if you don't have that.
And do you hit, when you're home, do you hit like Camp Rhino or anything?
I used to. I haven't in a while. I need to get back there. And usually mainly I'd start hitting it like building up to a race. But lately, I haven't raced in a couple years because I've been doing this and, a few other things. I just haven't had the time. And plus I didn't want, a lot of the races were before the tour started and I didn't want to take a chance on breaking something, or hurting myself. So I mainly I've just been working out, I run out, I run outside and I find things and, climb.
And are you still doing the Blue Man thing during the year or no?
I'm not. I've unfortunately had to give that up to do this. And I've been there 17 years and I love the show.
That's a long time.
Yeah, it's a long time. I love the show. I love the people. But, this, when I had this opportunity, you'll see, this is really, for me, it's home, man. I love doing this. It's exactly the way I play. And it was just time for me to move on,
17 years is a long time.
Yeah.
But this is 6 weeks of the year.
Yeah.
So leaves 48.
We start working, a couple weeks before. So there's, there's 2 months of work here. And then I play with a show called Raiding the Rock Vault in Las Vegas. Now it's like a classic rock review. It has different guys from, you know, like we have a guy from Quiet Riot come in, a guy from Bad Company, Hard, you know, Dio, all these different guys from different bands, you know, rotate through when they're not on tour, and we do this classic rock review. So it's fun. So I play with all these cool guys, and I get to, you know, play and then go home with my kids at night, you know, so.
Dude, well, what's better than that?
Yeah, exactly.
Not have to do, like, the road thing.
Exactly, yeah.
Cause,
that's called Raiding the Rockfall if you're ever in Vegas.
Raiding the Rockfall?
Raiding the Rockfall.
And it is currently playing...
At the Hard Rock Hotel.
At the Hard Rock Hotel, which is, of course, where it should play.
Yeah.
So I think when I met you... Sorry. When we first started talking in 2012, and I did even, like, a phone interview, we were talking about sort of how, you know, the 80s revival was kind of started. And I think now, even more so... There's a lot of love, right? Yeah. Like, you know, bands going back out on tour and just like, I guess, let's call it like hair metal getting like respect, right? Because like, oh, it's not cool for the longest time. And I feel like even in the last 5 years, don't you think it feels like a wave of like, it's cool to be cool again?
Exactly, yeah. And yeah, I mean, the guys who survived it, because there's people that didn't survive, you know what I mean, who got, because it was hard, man, when you go from being adored, like some of the guys I know who, you know, like they were way more popular than we were in bands, and then in the matter of like a few months, you go to being kind of hated and being made fun of.
Was it really that fast, though?
No, it was fast.
Because there's this idea that Nirvana killed it, right?
Yeah.
Did it really happen that fast?
It happened very quickly. And it wasn't just like, that. It was like MTV decided at one point they were just no longer going to support the music. And like overnight, like we had it, you know, we had an album we just put out. And we sold, you know, like, I want to say, I forgot how many, you know, thousands of, I mean, we sold a lot of records like our first day and our first week, which normally would have been considered amazing. And they say, well, we're not going to play your videos. And we're like, why? And the answer was because it's degrading to women. And this video we put out was not degrading to women. It had some kind of, you know, scantily clad women in it, but it wasn't degrading to women.
Right.
But then we'd look at MTV and they're playing rap videos that are really degrading women. So it wasn't really... about that. They had just decided that they wanted to change things for whatever reasons, and so they just stopped playing us. And that was like, back then MTV was basically like the only radio station that mattered, you know?
Right.
And so when they stopped playing it, we could tour for, you know, maybe another year, you know, okay, and then just, you know, like, but any new records that came out just were not supported. And,
just nobody was buying them because they wouldn't get the support.
Yeah, and then you had Beavis and Butthead kind of making fun of the music, and you know this, and so like those guys, like I said, you know, who, I won't mention names, but they were pretty, you know.
Like, I'm sorry, you just made me like remember Beavis and Butthead.
You could probably figure out who they are, but guys that were, you know, they were pretty devastated by the change. And who were really talented, and who probably didn't ask for those labels, you know that they got from being in hair metal bands. And so,
did you just get some money? Somebody buy something on PayPal?
I wish. but you know, and they turned to drugs and alcohol, and a lot of them have lost their lives or ruined their lives. You know, so it's kind of sad. But the guys who are out there, you know, and can take advantage of, you know, that nostalgia is coming back. You know,
it seems like it's in a big way. Let me ask you. So who, like I was showing him, we were in the car looking you up, mm-hmm. like videos. Did they still own the publishing? And like, you don't see any of that if they're like monetizing these videos on YouTube or?
Well, you know, it's hard because the percentages you get from digital plays is so low. Like, and people post, I mean, I don't know if you've seen this, but you can look up like big artists that post their royalty checks now, and they'll show like 5 million streams, you know, $50, you know what I mean? And that's their check. So the rate that you get is so low. It's you know, I mean, the way that the big artists are making money now is touring, whereas it used to be you toured to support a record and your record sales making money. Now you make a record and you don't ever expect to make any money, you know.
But I feel like in some ways flipping the script, as it were, isn't that bad, whereas you, let's say, if you put something out like on Spotify and it mm-hmm. catches, you didn't need Warner Brothers to do that for
exactly.
you.
Exactly. It's
but then
easier,
you could sell merch and a
it's
tour.
It's easier to get, you know, your music out to the public now, whereas it used to be you had to go through a gatekeeper
right.
companies, you know. And now anybody can get their music out there. The problem is that no one's figured out how to monetize it really yet. You know, I mean, if you're, you know, if you're you know, very successful and you're doing millions and millions of views on YouTube, then you can make some money, you know. But if you're like a moderately successful band, there hasn't been a way to really
right. monetize and, it and yet. Moderately successful could mean like millions of downloads, but not exactly. tens of millions of downloads.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. I'm sure Justin Timberlake gets like a billion.
Yeah.
But just, and again, I'm not trying to get into your pocketbook. I'm just curious, like, do you own, like, when the stuff shifts, right? So whoever you had a contract with, mm-hmm. I don't know, Warner Brothers, like, I'm just thinking of big.
Yeah, well, I can tell you this, like, our, you know.
Who owns that stuff?
Well, you
anybody in your band or just somebody somewhere?
Yeah, no, you own part of it, but a lot of times what happens is you take advances on, you know, on publishing or royalties or even merchandise, you know, and like when things are continuing to sell, you know, you pay your advance back, and in the next record cycle you get another advance. Well, like when you have a big, you know, a lot of what happened to a lot of people is you have a big record coming out, you take big advances. And then, like I said, MTV stopped supporting, and then you have these large advances you never pay back.
So you're not going to see anything.
The interest keeps mounting, and so it's there's no way you would ever see any money back because the interest keeps piling up. And you know, and we tried to audit at one point the record company because you know there was lots of things on there that we didn't charge, and you can't fight them. You know what I mean? And so like you owe this large advance, and even with merchandise, like you know, Slaughter can't sell merchandise because we owed so much to the merchandise company. We'll never pay it back. So it's like, why even bother selling merchandise? You'll never make a penny off it. You know what I mean?
Couldn't
so.
You? But if they're not looking for you, couldn't you, like, I don't know, sell
some
it on the web?
Do.
Right?
Some people do.
Like, if you started, you know what I mean? If you started slaughtermerch.com, and, like, are they going to really come after you? You know what I mean?
They have come after people.
Really?
They have, yeah.
Even for small amounts of money?
Even for small amounts of money. So, yeah, it's just, it's not worth the risk, really, you know? And they've got big pocketbooks. You know, so you can't fight them. You know, it's a tough business, man. Like when kids ask me about the music, is it's you know it's a I don't know what to tell them.
It's so different now, though.
It's so different. I wouldn't even know what to do with it.
But when you got in, you know, if you asked someone from the 50s, it was still the same. Like record labels are always going to try to screw over the little guy, and like of course, like they put you over a barrel until you're big enough that you can finally say, okay, now I want some of it or whatever.
Exactly.
So that's always been the case, but you're saying now it's worse in some ways.
Well, actually worse and better because you don't need them to get
right,
your
music
out.
Right, that's what I'm
out,
saying.
You know, and some people, and I've read articles and interviews with people that have been successful at making money, but it's a new generation of entrepreneurs and they're figuring these ways out, but they're not the traditional ways that it was. Like, you're not making money off royalties off your records anymore. You know, you have to figure out different ways. And, like, mainly, like, a lot of these young bands, they go on tour and they get sponsors. They'll wrap their buses with Red Bull or whatever it is, you know what I mean? And that's how they just figure out ways to make money. But it's just not the way it used to be.
Right.
So,
and again, I think that, like, in the 80s, that would be super uncool, right? And now it's kind of like people just expect that your tour is sponsored by Pepsi.
Everything's named something or other, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Are you guys sponsored by anybody?
We're sponsored by the Hallmark Channel.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And
so do they do some sort of special every year? I'm pointing to the television.
It was a TV special. Yeah, it still runs sometimes. You know, it probably is running somewhere right now. Maybe you know, but there was a special they did based on one of the records. You know, and so that's kind of what the beginning of the show is actually. It's based on the TV special they did for Hallmark.
When was this? Did I miss it?
It's been the TV show was actually created a long time ago. But it still plays, you know, so it still has life in it.
Right. And so we're at what stop number are we on the tour tonight?
You know, I have no idea.
It's Wednesday, we're in Atlanta?
We're about midway through our runs. I'd say 25-ish, somewhere around there.
Right.
Yeah. But it's hard to keep track when you're out of here.
No, but I think it's great you got this, like, local gig. I forget how old your kids are, but I got 3 kids.
Yeah, I got 10 and 12.
Right, okay. So mine are 11. Are they boys or girls?
One boy, one girl.
Okay, who's easier?
My boy is easier.
Really?
Yeah.
My daughter is so much easier. Now, I know it might be difficult.
Is your daughter the older or the
She's
younger?
The 11.
She's the older?
She's the older, yeah. My sons are 9 and 5, and they're nuts. Tell them Clayton's here with us.
Well, my son is older.
True or false? Nuts.
It could be an age. My son's older, and he's the easier one. My daughter... is younger, and I don't know if it's a competitive thing and she has to prove like her place, you know, but yeah, it's
Now, how are you about like phone and social media stuff? Are they on it, not on it?
No, they're not on. Although my daughter pretends to be on, and she hijacks my accounts, and she'll sneak behind my back to see my passwords. She's basically taken over my Snapchat, which I don't use them a lot. Like, I register my names on things just so I have them so people can't impersonate me, although they still do. But my daughter has gotten on my – she's way more tech savvy than I am, you know, and she knows how to – edit videos, and she's like into horror. She makes horror movies on iMovie, and
my daughter has taught me stuff on iMovie. It's kind of amazing.
It is.
But you know what's interesting is that she hasn't had anybody like. Well, she had one boy who was kind of being creepy, but he's so young that I don't even think he was creepy. He just is awkward.
Yeah.
So we had one of those, and then she put a video up with her friend, and the friend's mom said, "Well, now I." If you search my daughter's name, this video came up. So it's like this whole thing is like, ugh.
It's a whole new world, man. We didn't have to deal with any of this. You know,
a whole new world. Sorry.
Different challenges. Like we're the pioneers of dealing with this stuff because nobody's had to deal with these kind of things with kids before, you know? So there's no precedent on knowing what to do because on the one hand, you can't – like I have friends that have tried to completely shut them out of electronics and stuff, but they're going to be crippled in life because they won't know – how to, you know, like getting jobs, they're not going to know how to use these tools, you know, but the other hand, you have to find what the boundaries are. You know?
But don't you also think that if you, like, the more you're like, it's like, hey, don't date that person. You know what they're going to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So people try to, why would people try to impersonate you? Like for money?
Oh man, I don't even want to tell you. No. Well, I'm not sure why, but a lot of people have, you know, and I see them all the time, like, you know, they'll post a picture of a profile and say, don't follow this person, it's not me. And you get people that will create accounts of, you know, I want to say celebrities to get likes. I don't really know what they're trying to accomplish. Maybe it makes them feel good some way, or I don't, maybe they're super fans and they want to be involved. I'm not really sure why they do it, you know, but I had this one guy, and this has been going on for years, man, probably 15, 20 years. This guy,
dude, I hope we didn't see it. I hope we didn't blow it during that awesome story of the hairdresser lady. I'll have to tell it again, but I don't even think I've ever sat next to you this close. Listen, you do look great, seriously. Like a lot of folks your age who've done what you've done, they look rode hard and put up wet, dude.
Well, I've never drank, which I've always been kind of an outcast in the rock world because I never drank, I never did drugs. So I think that helped. You know,
well, clearly, it's trust. That's huge because I don't drink either. But I mean, you like I'm 45, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I exercise. 46? I work out. Yeah, I forget too, man. But I, you know, like I try to stay healthy. A lot of it's for my kids, man. I don't, you know, that's my biggest fear is leaving my kids. You know what I mean? So I try to stay healthy for them so I can continue to chase them around. You know.
Yeah, I feel like I'm definitely healthy for them, and for me, it's also about like being the example.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
like they see mommy go to the gym and daddy running all the time.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter what we tell them; they see us doing that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, it's more important what they see than what you tell them for sure.
Right.
You know, they end up being like you. You know, most of the time. You know.
So, I was asking you when if you're listening to, what's it called?
Hair Nation.
If Slaughter comes to the radio, do you turn it up? Do you just like enjoy it?
I enjoy it.
Do you feel special for a minute?
And I don't, because I don't listen to, I don't listen to our music much, you know, if it's not on. So when it comes on, it's kind of a treat, you know. And sometimes I forget, like, hey, that was pretty cool. You
know? Like that song's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I remember like we had a song called Fly the Angels, and
isn't that the biggest one?
That was our biggest song, and the first time I heard that done, like we'd recorded just the music demo for it out in California, getting, you know, trying to get a record contract, and then the first time I heard Mark's vocals come back, I knew, I was like, wow, man, that's like a really good song, and I knew, you know, something was going to happen with that song. You just tell, you don't hear like that every day, so yeah. Pretty cool
because he had that like super.
It's just something comes together, like everything musically and lyrically, and you know, it all came together. Like I heard it back the first time, it just gave me chills. I was like, "Wow, man!" Because I'd played in bands since I was a kid. We wrote songs and like, but I heard that and I was like, "That's something special, man." You know, you just tell.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks for. I think it was good catch up.
Yeah, man. Yes. I'm gonna.
Let's do a race, dude.
I would love to do a race. I gotta get back out there.
I mean, I will stay on you on Facebook. I'll be like, have you signed up for one yet? Have you? What about? Have you done Tough Mudder or just Spartans?
I've just done Spartans, and I do some other ones. I can do the Badass Dash.
Right. They're not coming back. They're done.
Badass Dash done. Oh, yeah. No. That was a fun one, man. You know, a lot of.
That's the last time I saw you. It was 2014.
But Spartan's my favorite. I need to do a Tough Mudder. The only thing that scares me about Tough Mudder is like the pain stuff. Like,
well, you can skip the electric if you want to.
The electrical shock and the ice cold water. But yeah, I'll definitely. I still train. I still want to do it, so I'll be back. Yeah.
All right. Well, good talk, dude.
I may not win the Masters, but I'll be back.
All right. Good talk, dude.
All right.
There you have it. Thank you so much for listening. Told you it was on the shorter side, but hope you enjoyed it just the same. Hope you had a merry, merry Christmas, and you're going to enjoy the next week. We are going to bring you these every Wednesday. You may or may not get another episode between now and next week. Might squeeze in a little bonus episode, but you are at minimum getting one every Wednesday morning, 6 a.m. You can set your clock by it, and I mean it. Happy Christmas, everybody. Gotta run. Away.
stop.